simple and that fun. We want everyone we know to come to the house, just like sweet Southern people always have some sweet tea brewed and available, and tell your friends and family, hey, stop by the house. Come to the house, and we're always good to sit and visit and just hang out for a little while. We've kind of seen our church as that the last couple of weeks. The house of God, obviously, his house, but he's given us permission to invite everyone that we want to this party, to this celebration, to this spiritual experience that's happening here in the house. And I know you're doing that because I see guests throughout the building, even on a rainy Sunday where people are probably worried about the remnants and outer bands of Florence making their way in to our area. I saw the trees blowing a little bit, but it's not going to be a problem here. But even on a rainy Sunday, there's guests all around the building, and we're excited. We're excited about having each of you here today. Next Sunday, we're having Friends and Family Sunday, and it's going to be a fantastic time. We have some special things planned for our guests, gifts that we want to give our guests, and just a great worship experience that we want them to be a part of. You'll find these cards, these invitations. They're all on the tables behind your sections. They're out at Church Central. You can get these anywhere. Once next Sunday comes, these are useless to us because they are date specific. So we need to get them out all over the community. And I want you to invite as many people as you can. Be a wonderful family experience to get some cards and just go up and down your street sometime this week and just invite your neighbors, invite your friends to be at church with you, because we want everyone to experience how fantastic the presence of God is. And I think we're learning the last couple of weeks that there are some pretty exciting things that are happening around the church. I hear that just about every day. It's exciting to see what's happening here at our church, and I want to be a part of what's happening. And so we have people signing up to be a part of Team Church and people going through Discover Church. We've already seen about 25 or 30 people go through Discover Church already this year, which is fantastic and incredible. We have people that are saying, I want to know about the church. I want to be a part of what is happening. We talked last week about a house party and really likened our church service to a party, and how parties are fun and parties are places of celebration. All of you have been to a boring party, and the next time an invitation rolled around from that person, you probably realized you had the important task of folding socks or something. You made sure you had something else going on so you didn't have to go to a boring party. It's never boring here at the church, and we want it to be a place where it is exciting and it is alive and it is vibrant, because this is a fun place. And I want my friends, I want my neighbors, I want my co-workers, I want strangers, I want people I know and people I don't know. I want everyone to experience this, because I believe it's bad form to party alone. You should never party alone. You ought to utilize the buddy system when you're coming to church. I want one of my friends to enjoy this with me. And a lot of times you go to a party and you make sure the environment is just right. Rooms are set up in order for people to see one another. This is something Kristen is so passionate about. If we have a gathering, she's going to go move seating around and like, what are you doing? Why are you moving the chairs? Well, I want people to be able to see one another and face one another, have conversations. She's been up here every day this week making sure that the small group tables were aligned just right and put out just right, because she wanted it to be able to flow and work to facilitate a crowd of people around each table. We arrange rooms like that so that people can connect with one another, where people can share with one another and experience life with one another. That's why circles are better than rows. Say that, circles are better than rows. What does that mean? Circles are better than rows. Rows are important. Rows are what you're sitting in right now. You're sitting in rows of people, and rows are important. Everything that happens on Sunday is very, very important. And the opportunity to preach, the opportunity to communicate, the opportunity to hear the word of God. The Bible says that we overcome by that. We're strengthened by that. We're saved because of that. We know that success begins on Sunday. And I hope that you're in church every single Sunday, that you're physically able to be in church, because I don't want you to miss what God is doing. I don't want to miss what God is doing. So Sundays are very, very important. What happens in rows is very, very important. And generally, talking in circles isn't a positive thing. Clarity is important for us. Getting into circles where we learn people's names and we hear their stories, where hearts are melded together, that is what we want. We want to become larger on Sunday. We want to put more rows out in this building. We want every seat on every row to be filled. We want to have multiple service opportunities to accommodate the people that are coming to sit in rows here. And I believe all of that is happening. I believe we're growing every single week. But I don't want to just grow larger on Sunday and not get smaller in our circles. Because one of the critical issues in the church today is that it's getting larger. There are churches that are massive, but people do not know one another. People do not connect with one another. People do not share or do life with one another. And here's the reality. There are things that happen face to face that never, ever happen shoulder to shoulder. And we're committed to being a face-to-face church and not just shoulder to shoulder. We have circles and we have rows, and both of them are important. Both of them matter. We believe that everyone needs both circles and rows. The reality is we were all created to live in community, which is countercultural to hide behind the screen. I only know you by Facebook way of life. We're struggling to really go into depth with one another or connect with one another, or even look one another in the eye sometimes, because you know how it is. Sometimes you're married and you're texting your spouse who's on the other side of the house. You say, no, that's just lazy. I'm sure all of that is in play, but the reality is we're finding it easier to talk to this screen than we are to talk to people face to face. And it's a real problem. It's a real concern in the world today. So how can we be better than that? Because the truth is, life alone is sad. Life alone is boring. Life alone is even dangerous. I don't want to live life alone. Circles are for everyone. If you've got young kids, you're always trying to come up with play dates for your kids. You know, we're that's why you can barely get into Chick-fil-A, because there's so many play dates going on, and that's why McDonald's puts big play centers up in the front of their eating establishments, because there's play dates. Kids want to get together and play and have fun. And today after church, there is seniors lunch. You have to be a senior to go to lunch this afternoon, 55 or 60, I don't know, Tommy's age and up, something like that. Whatever that is. You got to be a senior to go to senior's lunch. They're working hard to get together with one another. But it seems like right in the middle, we're no longer kids and we've not reached that retirement age. And right in the middle, we just work hard and all we do is work hard. And all we know to do is to spend more time. And if we get any free time, then we have some sort of project around the house that we need to be working on. And the last thing on our list is connecting with other people. I'm in the hardest years of my life. I'm in the most challenging years of my life trying to raise teenagers or trying to navigate marriage. In the toughest years of life, we're not on easy street, not at the place where we can just buy what we want. We're still paying for the life that we want to have, and you're just working hard and you're feeling more stress than ever and feeling the pressures of life, but we will not take time to connect with other people, and it is dangerous. Solomon the wise knew something that we need to learn. And he makes an observation about relationships that goes right to the heart of the issue and the importance of being in a small group. And the reason that some are not in small groups are the same. We're too busy. We're running kids everywhere. I'm an Uber driver for my kids. Wherever they need to go, and their schedules are as busy as Kristen and I's are. So we got to get them where they need to go. And then there's sports. And then, you know, spouses' schedules are not in sync. And we seem to be running two different directions at the same time, but guess what? Everyone that you meet at a small group will be just as busy or busier than you are. Everyone. Everyone will be just as busy as you are. We're all busy. We're all too busy to do anything, but the reality is we need to do something. And those who are in circles understand that no matter how busy or how hard it is, we need this. And they understand what Solomon meant when he said, two are better than one. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. Basically, you need friends in your life to help you move. You know, when it's time to pack up the house, and when we're pastoring back home, we had a young, you know, lots of young couples in the church, and it seemed like they were always moving. I do not like to move. Moving is miserable. Moving is no fun. Moving is stressful. They like to move like every 6 months. No, I'm moving, man. I'm going to save $17 on my house notes, so I'm moving. You know what? I will gladly give you $17 every month if you will not move. Because, you know, when you go to church with people and you got a gang of friends, you don't need to pay movers, you've got friends. I'm inviting people in my small group to help me come and move. And, you know, so we're picking up dressers and loading up mattresses and packing up, you know, houses, and seemed like we were always doing that every weekend for someone. Everything seems to go easier and happen faster when you have two people. When you're partnered up with someone, when you're joined up with someone, it just seems like things go a lot easier. Things happen much faster. But Solomon gets to the tension around this idea. When you look at the 10th verse, he says, if either of them falls down, one can help the other up. Just pause right there for just a moment, because I think this is important. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. Why is this important? Because someone will fall. It's just a reality. It's just a fact. It's life. There's no need to cite statistics to you. The Bible tells us that someone will struggle. Someone will fall. Someone you know, someone you live with, someone you're married to, someone you're related to or you're connected to, someone will struggle in life. And if there are two there, if there are two people there, then one can help the other up. And I hear you saying, no thanks, I'd rather fall in private. I get it. I understand. When you really mess up in life, there's nothing in you that wants to be more secretive or wants to be more hidden or wants to be more guarded than when you're the one who's made a mistake. But guess where the statistics do come in? Your chances of survival are much higher if you have help. If you have someone there, if you're connected to someone, if you have someone who can help you when you fall. My stepfather Elmo and my brother, I have an older brother and an older sister, they went in together and bought a boat. They didn't have this boat for very long, and I suspect that probably neither one of them knew as much about owning a boat as perhaps they needed to. They had been on other people's boats and all of that, but they bought a boat, and they're out on the lake one evening, and I don't remember the details as far as what happened exactly, but they were in a boat that was sinking, and they were a long way out in that boat. I know we just had a group, and some are still on the trip, a fishing trip, deep sea fishing the last couple of days, and they told me this morning that they were about 30 or 40 miles out. And you know, some of the first timers, you know, when you get that far out and you're looking and all you can see is water in every direction. There is no island. Gilligan is not there. I mean, there's no other boats. You're just out there and you realize how dependent you are on this boat staying on the top of the water. But Elmo, my stepfather, and John, my brother, they were in a boat that was sinking, and they were on a very large lake, and they were a long, long way from the shore. The boat is all the way down into the water, and I don't remember their life vest situation or exactly all that happened, but I know it was panic time, and they were very nervous. And my brother, who is fit and strong, he tells my stepfather to hang on to the boat as long as he can, and ultimately that is a futile effort because it has sunk now all the way under the water. And so Elmo, who is at this point 60 plus years old, he is out treading water, and my brother begins to swim. He starts swimming in the direction of the shore. He's well over a mile out, and it takes him a while to swim that distance. And by the time he gets there, he is completely exhausted and has taken on plenty of water himself. And ultimately, the story all turned out well, and the Coast Guard got there to rescue and to get everyone safely to shore. But you think about what would have happened if either one of them by themselves were out on the lake. He said, two are better than one. Two are better than one. And if either of them falls down, then one can help the other up. And then he says in the next part of verse 10, pity anyone who falls down and has no one to help them. He said, man, I feel sorry for people who do not have help. People who do not have relationships. People who are not connected to someone who can help them up. I'm just wondering today, have you ever seen someone fall financially and there was no one to help them up? Have you ever seen a couple fall in their marriage and there was no one? Maybe a family member. maybe a sister was there. Or maybe no one was there to help them up. What about a serious illness or tragedy with a child? But there was no one to help them up. I remember we went through a crazy season with Jude, and he got a virus and was very sick, and we were in and out of the hospital, and we were, I don't know how many hospital stays or how many nights, but we had been at the hospital a long time, and I never will forget one night when it was particularly stressful, and we were all out of answers, and the doctors were all out of answers, and he was losing weight, and there was all kinds of things happening and plenty of things to be concerned about. It's late one evening, and he's sleeping in the bed, and Kristen and I are both in the room, and in through the hospital door walks a pastor from our area. We knew one another. We weren't necessarily friends. In fact, there were probably some valid reasons that we shouldn't have been friends, and things that had happened in silly preacher world and stuff like that. But I don't know, this guy comes walking through the door and he just pulls up a chair and sits down across from Kristen and I. And I don't know, we sat there for 2 or 3 hours. I never will forget, we just talked about life. We just talked about how hard it is sometimes to keep all of these things together. And Kristen and I have never forgotten it. And whatever reasons there might have been for us not to be friends up until that point, there was absolutely no reason after that, because we became great friends. And to this day are people who could count on one another if we needed to. I remember when they went through a tragedy just a couple of years after our situation. They went through a tragedy, and I was privileged to be one of the first people to walk through the door and try to help where I could, because you don't forget people who are there. And that's what Solomon's saying. Pity anyone. I feel sorry for anyone. I my heart is broken for anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Have you ever seen someone fall morally and there's a wife or a husband who's crying out, but there is no one to help them? Here's the question. If you were to face a situation like that, if you were to face any kind of situation, who in your life has permission to ask, are you okay? And not accept, I'm fine, as your answer? Who do you have in your life that can help you if you get into trouble? Who can ask the tough questions? Do you have a group? Do you have a tribe? Do you have a circle in your life? Are there people in your life that if you were to fall financially or morally or in sickness, who are already, people who are already in place to help you get back up? Solomon said, pity anyone who falls and has no one. And then he continues to verse 12, and he said, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. He changes the imagery a bit, and it goes from someone falling, someone struggling, to someone being overpowered. I have to believe that overpowered, modern word for overpowered, if you will, is overwhelmed. What happens when I get overwhelmed? Though one may be overpowered, though one may be overwhelmed, two can defend themselves. I may fall because a trip. I may fall because I'm being careless in how I'm walking my life. I may fall because I'm making wrong choices. But if I get overpowered, if I get overwhelmed at some point in life, either through no fault of our own or because of our own choices, we will feel overwhelmed. In fact, overwhelmed may need to be considered as a new diagnosis. It's probably something that the doctors could say, you know what, you've got got a strong case, an acute case of the overwhelmed, because we feel it. We go through it. We deal with it, from too much on our plates to schedules that are too far from right priorities. We feel more overwhelmed than ever before. I'm going to tell you something. Daryl, I don't make good decisions when I'm overwhelmed. I don't know about you. What happens to you when you get so stressed? What happens to you when you get overwhelmed? How do you cope? What is your drug of choice? What do you run to for relief? How do you handle it? He said, listen, if you just had some help in your life, if you just had someone in your life, there's no doubt all of us are going to feel it at some point in our lives. But Solomon is trying to tell us we will react differently and we'll react to it better if there is someone to help us, someone to walk with us. And then he says in verse number 12, this very familiar statement, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. We use that in weddings. I say it in weddings. It's wonderful to have a marriage that has God intertwined, a cord of the Lord intertwined, so that that marriage is held together by the values, the principles, the goodness of God, a commitment to the things of God. But listen, that verse is not written for just married people. It's written for life. It's written for you and I, that if I am in partnership with someone else, if I'm in relationship with someone else, if I'm in a circle with someone else, if I'm connected to someone else, then we have Jesus involved in all of that. It's not going to be easily broken, because here's the truth. I've seen many relationships and have been a part of groups, both leading and attending, and have met many brokenhearted people, but I've never seen anyone who was brokenhearted, who was in community, left broken. The saddest person I've met, they weren't able to stay sad if they were in community and connected to other people. That doesn't mean that life isn't going to happen. That doesn't mean that struggles aren't going to come. That doesn't mean the overpowered is not going to happen. The overwhelmed is not going to be felt. But if I am in a circle, I know this is bold, but I believe that even though life may break your heart, if you're in authentic community, you cannot stay broken. That's the power of the church. Because at some point, every single one of us will need someone. All of us. The most, you know, self-contained, I don't need anyone. The strongest, you know, I don't have to have anyone. All of us at some point will need someone. And you know what I think is true? I believe circles can prevent some things from happening. It's on your screen. Circles are preventative. They're preventative. Why? Because someone can see what you can't see. Sometimes we have blind spots. We can't see. We were driving for a while, our vehicle. Someone, I think, tried to break into our vehicle when we were back home, and had a mirror that was broken. It would only turn so far, and one of those electric deals. And so it was fine for the position of Kristen's seat, but if I was driving that vehicle where I needed the seat positioned, I couldn't see in the mirror. I'd have to really lean up. And then even sometimes leaning up, I couldn't see all of the traffic that was to my left, and there was more than one time I was trying to change lanes thinking it was wide open, and the kids are screaming in the back seat, and horns are honking, and Kristen is sweetly patting my shoulder saying, "Sweetheart, baby, be careful." No, it was, "Hey, what happened?" They could see something I couldn't see. You need people in your life who can see it coming. Have you ever been with others and notice how they're treating their kids, or how he's treating her, or maybe how she keeps dismissing him, and you can see it coming? In a circle, if there is something coming over time, someone will feel comfortable enough to say to you, "I see it coming, and I want to help you." Circles. Circles are better than rows. You know what? Every marriage needs support now so that it won't need life support later. That's why we have a strong marriages small group. Doesn't mean you have to be in crisis. It doesn't mean you have to be on the brink of divorce. It doesn't mean you have to have problems. Because if you've been married any amount of time at all, what is it about a relationship storm? We've known about Florence coming for days and days and days and preparing. What is it about the hurricanes that come to relationships that just come out of nowhere? What happened? Where did it come from? What'd I do? That's why we have strong marriages, small group. Every student needs support now. Now. Every middle schooler, every high schooler needs support now to help them with the decisions and the choices that they're making now, and even those that they'll make later. That's why we have a CY small group, church youth. CY? CY? The truth is, you have no idea how many accidents you've avoided by being a good driver. Just have no idea. You know why? Because it's impossible to quantify. It's impossible to count what could have happened. That's what group life is like. You don't know what could have happened, but because you're in a group, because two are better than one, because you're in a circle, group life is a bit like retirement savings, that in that if you wait, it won't be there when you need it. If you've made no relationship deposits, it's hard to expect to make withdrawals when you need them. I read a story this week about the redwood trees. They're the largest trees in the world. They grow 300 feet in the air, but their roots only go about 3 feet into the ground. If you've ever seen them, they're unbelievable. Oftentimes, their girth, their circumference is wider than the car you're driving. Massive, 300 feet in the air, but their roots only go 3 feet into the ground. Most trees that go 70 feet up have roots that go 70 feet down. That's how they stand through the storm. Palm trees are so powerful because some of them have roots that go a mile into the ground. They bend, they sway, but they do not break. Not because they're strong outwardly, they're little skinny things. But because their roots are strong. So how does the redwood face the onslaught of a storm and not topple over? The answer is in the root system. They may go 3 feet deep, but they spread out. And what's amazing about the roots of the redwood is that they link up with other redwood roots. And they join and intertwine. And now, instead of the storm blowing against one tree, it's blowing against a forest. The forest ranger I was reading the report from said, I can take you to trees in this forest that have been dead for years, but they're still standing. And the only reason they're still standing is because the other trees won't let them go. Why let it fall if there's even the remote chance it could come back to life? That's the power of community. That's the power of getting face to face and not just shoulder to shoulder. Listen, if Sundays are your thing, I don't want you to miss a Sunday. I want you to be here. But I want to implore you today. I want to invite you today to open yourself up to the possibility of a small group. You mean I can go sign up for cake decorating and get everything you just talked about? Yeah, and cake. How fantastic is that? How does that work? Wait a minute, Pastor Darrell. I have no interest in sitting in a circle and hello, my name is, and telling all. No, that's not. Please don't think that's what this is. Not. We have square pegs for people that feel like, where do I fit? Where do I fit? Where do I fit in God's plan and God's kingdom? Got discipleship. I hear you preaching, but I don't even know how to. Where is Ecclesiastes? Much less, how do you spell it? How do I learn about the Bible? How do I understand that this verse? Got discipleship, small group, marriages. What do you need in your life? Today, you can join a small group. And with roots that may not go very deep, you can link up with others. And we won't let you fall. We'll hold you. You can help hold us. And together, we will build a strong church. Yeah. That's how awesome God is. So I want to tell our small group leaders, you can go to your tables right now. You can go to your tables.